You're listening to Zen Crossing, where spirituality meets everyday life, with your host, Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Today we'll be talking about the path of the artist and the Zen path. Our guest today is Bruce Morser. Bruce is an internationally recognized freelance illustrator and educator. He's known for pencil and digital illustrations that appear in publications ranging from the National Geographic magazine to the Wall Street Journal. He's taught at Colgate University as well as Seattle's Cornish College of the Arts, School of Visual Concepts, and the Art Institute of Seattle. Originally, Bruce is from New England, but he maintains a studio here on Vashon Island where he and his family live. And Bruce came to the Zen Center about a year ago, I think, gave a talk. Absolutely fascinating. I got more comments about that talk. I really appreciate you having come then, and I appreciate you coming in today.
Great, thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Happy to be here.
Bruce, has art been a lifelong calling for you?
Yeah. From as early as I can remember, I was the kind of kid who had to draw pictures. And everyone would say, oh, someday you might be an artist, which I never really understood because I don't really understand that word, artist. And I was the kind of kid who had to take the vacuum cleaner apart, you know, once a week for a full year, you know, that kind of thing, where I had to know how everything worked. And I was just fascinated with making things, drawing things. So it's been a lifelong pursuit, but I never really understood it as, are you an artist or something? That didn't mean anything to me.
Huh. What goes through your mind when you're drawing?
That's an interesting question in that too much. That's the struggle. I really wish nothing was going through my mind, as I've joked with you about before, that when I sit down to work, as I do as a professional illustrator, I sit down and I get everything ready to go, and I got all my assignment materials out and so on. And as I really build up a head of steam and hit that creative zone, the same thought always comes to me. And this little voice inside me comes up and says, wouldn't you really rather have a piece of toast right now? And of course, I would rather have a piece of toast than work. But I fight it off. And when I'm drawing, often the things that are running through my head are things like that. Like, well, I wonder what the chainsaw's up to right now. There are things out in the yard that could benefit from that. And the thoughts are coming fast and furious. And I know through experience that these are not helpful in the process of making the art pieces I need to make. So I am constantly finding ways to turn that off or try to turn that off.
Hmm. What do you do in that regard?
It depends on what the project is. If sometimes projects require math, in which case I don't turn it off. I'm stuck with it and I do a bunch of calculating. But if I'm in a spot where I really want to make an imagery that has feeling, and the feeling is what the imagery is about, then I will do things, quite explicit things, to get rid of this thought. First, I start with a piece of toast. And if I just make my toast, like my mind is asking me, I can turn it off for half an hour. And then I will listen to a book on tape or listen to a podcast. And sometimes I listen to things I've listened to 100 times before. And it's almost like listening to somebody clicking their fingers. And I can get occupied in that. And this other side of me shows up that is less thinking and far more feeling. And that's where I need to be.
Hmm. I've heard you talk about the difference between boredom and tedium as an artist, because I imagine it can be tedious. Can you talk some about that?
Yeah, it's a good follow-on from what you first asked, in that a lot of the work of the kind of illustration or kind of drawing I do, it's very detailed. It has to look like something. It has to have what some people would call realism or illusion. It also typically, for clients like National Geographic, it has to be right. They care very much whether I've got the mollusk right side up or those sorts of things. So there's a real thought process in that. But also, just in all the imagery I'm making, I am constantly considering, what can I leave out? What can I leave in? All these little lines I'm drawing, how am I building it up? Where are the values? And I don't think about them as explicit thoughts, but I have to stay very focused. And that gets tedious at times. And sometimes I draw all night long. And just sticking with anything that long, it's tedious. So what I've learned is if I'm feeling tedious or it's tedium, that's fine. And it's a challenge that I have to rise up over. But I've learned now that the tedium is really other parts of me that are sort of jealous of my time or what I'm doing and that are trying to interrupt. And it will jump in and say, how about a tuna sandwich now? All those parts that will shake me and make me remind me that this is hard work and that if I just put them aside, that's fine. And I can stay in the tedium, which is usually an indication of something big I'm working on. If I get bored or I don't want to be there and I would just as soon really be somewhere else, I realize that the whole project, that part of me that loves the large sense of awareness I get from drawing, that's gone dry too. And the tedium then has a real chance of taking over. And then I really know I need to just stop because the source for what I was doing seems to have slipped away. And then I find something else to do. I will stop that whole project and find a new way to go about it. Boredom is bad in my line. Tedium is actually, even though it's a challenge, it's a good sign.
Interesting. It reminds me of breathing in our practice, you know, just to breathe over and over, to keep coming back to your breath and coming back to your breath and coming back to your breath. I mean, that it takes some doing. It can be tedious.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's where the action is. And if you can stay with it, stay with that coming back and coming back and coming back, over time, the whole process, as we quiet down, becomes really interesting. And partly because a whole nother world then opens up. It's like a gateway into another world. Which reminds me to ask you about this other world. Because we sometimes in Buddhism call it the world as it is.
Huh.
Just to be able to observe and experience the world just as it is, not as the way we think of it.
Yeah.
Is there a parallel?
We've got my hand up here. I can relate to this directly. I teach drawing, and one of the things I'm constantly telling people driving, probably too much, is this idea of I don't think most people should draw subjects. It's not about knowing. Drawing is not a skill. It's not like that. You're not picking up on things you know about and refining your knowledge of things. It is somehow about putting that all aside and simply, when I'm drawing, I am aware of what's in front of me. And everything you draw is absolutely brand new. I will get people to draw self-portraits. And they somehow think that there's this image of themselves that they're trying to capture. And it's like, no. Your face is actually not altogether that important when you're drawing a self-portrait. That piece of meat that's hanging in the front of your head is not that important when you're drawing a self-portrait. It's much more about how the light or the atmosphere is, and that's what you're capturing, is your face in this area. And you should also see no difference between your face and the background behind it. It's all the same thing. It's that awareness, that view, the whole picture is what's important in drawing. And most people want to jump to, like, I got to draw my face. And where are my eyebrows? And how many eyelashes do I have?
Mm. So knowing gets in the way.
Oh, very much so. And it's that same part of me that's calling out for a piece of toast that is the part that's knowing. It'll say, wait. We know about this. Wait. Two eyebrows, and they're eyeballs, and they're in little almond-shaped things, and it's all of that. I've been drawing, professionally for 35 years, and all those little voices still jump out at me, and I know now, it's like, no, I'm not drawing, if I'm drawing my face, I'm not drawing eyes or nose or eyebrows. I don't draw those things. They appear in the drawing. Someone else might recognize them, but I've drawn it as a pattern of awareness that I've come across, and that's what sort of sparked me about what you were saying. The bigger thing that arrives by sitting through the tedium. And when I sit through this tedium of becoming that level of aware, then I become pattern aware, I guess, of this amazing sort of set of things. And I can only feel it. I can't, I can barely see it. It's really almost not seeing. It's more feeling than sight. But there it comes.
Nice. That also reminds me of the concept of impermanence, because of course that which you are drawing is also changing, isn't it? I mean, everything's changing every moment. How does the teaching of impermanence resonate with you as an artist?
An extension of what we were just talking about. If you think in subject matter, like you want me to draw a cat or a car or something, then that is, we somehow all have this collective view of it. Our vision actually doesn't work that way. I mean, we all go through this life. We don't see in pictures. None of us do. We see in time. We see in flowing images. And every single split second, it's a different imagery, and our responses to it are different. And so that if you're trying to somehow capture a subject matter, it's an endless game that will lead you nowhere. But if you can become more aware of this sight in front of you, this wonderful thing that is, and I can't tell where the sight starts and the feeling starts. I get lost between those two, but because so much of my vision is a feeling, as well as an awareness of something. And I guess that's what awareness is kind of sight and feeling together. And that's what I try to capture.
I wonder also about interdependence, this concept that everything relates and relies on something else. Is that a part of the artist world or artist view, do you think?
Yeah. This is a good one. This is a deep one. It's easy to sort of say and try to convince somebody to, if you're drawing something that you're looking at, and I'm talking about drawing from what I see as opposed to drawing internally what I see, but I also do that. It's easy to try to convince somebody. Well, it's not easy to convince them, but it's easy to try to convince them that don't see the subject matter. Don't see it separate from the background. See everything together. But you're asking the bigger thing, which is this interdependence of all this imagery is this sort of pattern language of things. And that there's something deep inside of us that picks up on all these different patterns and creates this profound feeling. And it is the shadow on someone's nose or by the side of their face connected with the shadow of the behind them or the whatever. Mm-hmm. All of that works together to create this bigger feeling. And if you capture all of that, the feeling from the drawing is profound. Mm-hmm. That I'm convinced now, and I don't have the medical evidence or the research evidence on this, but that the human brain is approaching different drawings in very different ways. Literally different cells are involved, or different patterns of different cells. And that, you know, there's a part in a drawing where you realize this is more limbic system. This is more, you know, this profound feeling or fear or something. And there's part of drawings that can be very much part of, you know, the cerebral cortex. I'm sure, oh, this reminds me of this, and that's figures like that. And I very much like to play around in there and constantly go to that place that is more feeling oriented and less recognition is the right word for
less
it.
Less recognition, yeah. Less thought or storyline.
Yeah. The storyline, that's good.
Continue.
This is, you know, you asked, like, well, how long have you known you were an artist? Were you an artist as a kid? Back then, it was all storyline. I would draw an action scene with my brother on the page, and we never ended up with a piece of art or something like that. We just many explosions. I was your basic kid, dinosaurs, and, you know, submarines and this sort of thing. And it was all just one explosion after another. And the storyline is something that I think a lot of people are still interested in. I'm still interested, but I try to put that away now because that calls up this need for all these different subject matters. And even though I get hired to draw subject matter, I realize the subject matter can communicate far more profoundly if at least the imagery I'm offering up isn't subject matter centric. It is the other stuff. And then that connects with people. And then they get a better sense of what the subject are that are in question. And we get past the simple subject issues and into that bigger interconnectedness that you were talking about.
Well, I feel like we could go on for hours, Bruce.
Oh,
but time's all up.
Well, let's get a cup of coffee sometime. I'd love to carry on. That'd be great.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot for coming in, Bruce.
Oh, you bet. My pleasure.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.